Hey there, Legal Tea listeners. This is your host, Jenny Roselle. Today's episode of Legal Tea is a cautionary tale where we talk about real life cases. They are things that me or my office have actually worked on. On today's episode, we are going to talk about a couple that we've helped for a while now, like maybe 10 years or so, and something that has recently happened in their estate plan that has not only been a very unpleasant surprise, but the consequences of this very unpleasant surprise are really not fun. And there are going to be a few lessons that you'll be able to take away from this episode, so buckle up. Let's call this client, for sake of this episode, Bob and Sally. They are a married couple, lovely couple, such a pleasure to be around, Bob and Sally. They are not Indiana born, you see. They actually came to Indiana from another state about, 15 years or so ago. So while they lived in that former state, they had created their initial estate plan. And that estate plan, among other things, consisted of something called an irrevocable life insurance trust. A lot of professionals in my space call this type of trust an ILIT because it stands I-L-I-T, so irrevocable I, L for life, I for insurance, T for trust, ILIT. So anyway, this type of trust was commonly and is common and is like was commonly and is commonly done for people who have estate tax issues. I'm going to explain what I mean by that. And if you're a faithful Legal Tea listener, you know I recently did an episode on estate taxes, but I just feel like it's prudent to kind of explain what I mean by this in case someone has not listened to that episode. So before we even get started on the specific topic for this episode, I think, you know, it's incredibly important to get crystal clear on what the estate tax even is. And I say this because so many get the type of types of taxes confused. So super generally speaking, there are two types of taxes that are pertinent to my little estate world when someone passes away. First, inheritance tax, and second, estate tax. One of the biggest differences between inheritance tax and estate tax is who gets taxed. So with an inheritance tax, the beneficiary that receives the inheritance is who gets taxed. While with an estate tax, it's the estate of the deceased person is what gets taxed before the distributions are made to the beneficiary. Now here in my little state of Indiana, we actually repealed the inheritance tax about more than 10 years ago. But there are a small number of states that do have an inheritance tax, according to NerdWallet, which the article is linked in the source links for this episode. So be mindful of that if you're from, you know, a Legal Tea listener from any of the following states: Iowa, Kentucky, Maryland, Nebraska, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. So to clarify, there is no federal inheritance tax, just state inheritance tax. And interestingly, that number of states that I just referenced seems to decrease as time passes. Now, shifting to estate tax, this is the tax that happens on the estate, right, of the deceased person before the beneficiary gets their inheritance. Now, there is a federal estate tax, and even some states have state estate tax too, which is totally a tongue twister. Some cynics may say that that's very intentional, that the states that have state estate tax and a federal estate tax, but nonetheless, that's also a short list. We have Washington, Oregon, Minnesota, Illinois, New York, Vermont, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Maryland, and Maine. And if you're paying super close attention to this episode, Maryland is the only state that has a state inheritance tax and a state estate tax. So those states have a state estate tax, like I just said, but there's also a federal estate tax that is pertinent to every single one of us. And currently in 2024, the federal estate tax amount, what's called an estate tax exclusion amount, is $13.61 million per person. So as a married couple, you actually get two of those, my friends. And what does that actually mean? That means that estates that have less than that amount, $13.61 million individually and $27.22 million as a couple, there is not an estate tax imposed on your estate when you pass. However, if your estate exceeds that amount, the amount of that it exceeds, so whatever that amount that exceeds those amount, the amounts I just referenced, that is taxed at a fairly ungenerous rate. So something to be mindful of, though, is that of the states that I named that have a state estate tax, their state exclusion amount may be lower. So you may actually be subject to a state estate tax, but not a federal estate tax, or both. It just depends on the estate or the state. Now, all of that is fine and dandy, and I'm sure many of you are thinking to yourselves, well, those kind of numbers certainly don't apply to me, Jenny. And not so fast, because these amounts are supposed to decrease at the end of 2025, unless Congress has something to say about it. Now, it is some pretty high amounts still, but they are slightly more reasonable. So this is a perfect segue to what I want to talk about today, because if you look over the last, say, 15 years or so, it has gradually and sometimes exponentially increased. But even in 2008, which is 15 years ago, the estate tax threshold was only $2 million, which is way easier to go over than what it is today. So for that reason, a lot of people back in, you know, say 2008 or so, did, you know, call it fancier planning than what, you know, we do often today. And that's when enter the Irrevocable Life Insurance Trust, the ILIT. An ILIT was and continues to be a really popular estate planning tool for people that have an estate over that estate tax threshold. Back in 2008, Bob and Sally here, so back to my Bob and Sally client, they were definitely over the $2 million estate tax threshold. So back in 2008, they did an irrevocable life insurance trust. And I kid you not, the actual date of the trust was 2008. Nowadays, Bob and Sally would not be over the estate tax threshold, but nonetheless, they have this ILIT as kind of a just in case. An ILIT to work as an estate tax planning tool has to be first set up correctly, an insider secret. Bob and Sally cannot be the trustee. And second, it also has to be managed over the lifetime of Bob and Sally correctly. Now, Bob and Sally got it created correctly, but unfortunately, it did not get managed correctly. So here we go with those details. We were recently meeting with Bob and Sally, and like I said, we have worked with them for about 10 years. In that recent meeting, we were reviewing some assets and beneficiary designations because we were just kind of making sure, you know, they were making some pretty large changes to their estate plan, so I was just making sure all their assets and beneficiary designations were supportive of those changes. They have several life insurance policies, and when we asked about beneficiary designations on those policies, they were not 100% sure. They were like 90% sure of the beneficiaries, but not 100%. So I was like, you know what? I want to get that to 100%, so let's call your insurance agent and just have him send over kind of a recap of all your active policies, who owns each one, who's the insured, who's the beneficiary, etc. So Bob called while we were in the room, and the agent was like, yeah, sure thing, I'll send that over in just a few minutes. So we got the email, and I start reviewing what they sent over. Imagine my surprise. I see a policy on there that I did not know about, and that was held in an irrevocable life insurance trust. We, honest to goodness, had absolutely no idea that they had this ILIT, this irrevocable life insurance trust that they did in 2008. We, you know, after 10 years of working with Bob and Sally, they had never mentioned it. I'm not joking. Their level of calmness was unmatched. To this day, I seriously don't think they thought it was that big of a deal, that their estate planning attorney had no idea that this trust out there existed and this policy existed. I tried to remain calm. I think I succeeded. And I just kind of said, you know, just inquired about the trust document. And they said, well, we don't have a copy of it, but the CPA does. We're pretty sure. I'm not sure if you caught this a second ago, but I said one of the non-negotiables about setting up and creating this type of trust is that Bob and Sally cannot be the trustee. So they, back in 2008, when they set this trust up, they put their CPA, and for sake of this episode, let's call that CPA Ashley. They set their CPA as the trustee. So I contacted Ashley to get a copy of this trust. Thankfully, Ashley actually had a copy of it and she sent it over to me. Now, not to get super in the weeds of setting up an islet, but the trustee has to do something super, super, super specific every year. It's just part of every islet. Fun fact, they are called, it's kind of a weird name. They're called crummy letters. It's not because they are crummy. It's because there was a court case and one of the parties' names was crummy. So because of that case, the trustee of an islet has to send what are often called crummy letters to the beneficiaries of this trust. Well, I asked Ashley the CPA about the status of the crummy letters, and she told me she had never sent crummy letters to anyone, ever. And like I said, they're supposed to happen every single year to every single beneficiary, and they never got sent. Unfortunately, the trust is essentially a moot point at this point, and mainly because they've not been complying with the terms of this trust. If the IRS later down the road ever wanted to push the issue, the IRS definitely has the winning argument. And, you know, that was my gut instinct, but because of how much was on the line in terms of estate tax issues, estate tax planning, potentially some upset beneficiaries, I advise the client that we get a second opinion from another attorney. I have actually, in my 12 years, have never seen an islet not be followed correctly. So to honestly protect my client, I advise that we should recruit another attorney from another law firm who does the same type of law I do, to honestly give us a second opinion. Very long story short, after I sent her all the documentation and information, the other attorney is who I'm referring to, we had a meeting and she said exactly what I anticipated, that the trustee failed at their duty of doing these crummy letters. And at this point, they're basically kind of crap out of luck. Yikes. You know, I think this leads to the final point of this episode about, you know, the professionals involved. I, through what Ashley, the CPA, sent me, I saw a letter that the attorney who created the islet back in 2008, who remember was not us, it was in that former state that that the client used to live in. Anyway, I saw a letter that attorney put together, and it very clearly advised that the CPA, who is the trustee, remember, they were the ones supposed to send the crummy letters. And the client really, really likes the CPA. So I felt this kind of weird balance through this whole conversation of, yeah, you may like her, Ashley, the CPA, but she also messed up. And now it's going to cost you money of unwinding this islet. It's going to cost you time of dealing with all of this and potentially some energy too of having, you know, to keep these beneficiaries in the loop. So it's just not ideal at all. I have to wonder if the CPA does not normally serve in this role and maybe just flat didn't understand what the role of the trustee of an islet is supposed to do. Or even perhaps, if I flip the coin, maybe the CPA thought that the client would be sending the crummy letters, even though the crummy letters should come from the trustee. I don't know. I'm trying to minimize or deter any finger pointing. I'd rather just get to the issue and get it resolved and not do any of that stuff. I'm a big person on facts, not feelings. And the fact of the matter is, we're going to have to unwind this eyelet, which is a bummer. Alrighty, time is up, my friends. I hope this was an interesting episode for you. I hope this also wasn't too technical. I try to keep things not super technical on here, but I had to get a little technical just to like set this episode up. So hopefully it wasn't too much. Let's shift to a sneak peek of next week. We are circling back to the current trends topic where we talk about things that are going on that just impact my estate and elder law world. They are sometimes things that I even stumble across on the news or social media that are just relevant. So next week, we are going to talk about a local to me here in Indiana gentleman that passed away, and he set up his estate plan to dole out distributions to various charities, and it made the news, and his estate plan is super cool and interesting. So check that out next week. Talk to you then, Legal Tea listeners. Take care and be well.